This is former State Senator Joseph Silk from Oklahoma. You're listening to New NUMA Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to stay up to date on all the latest podcasts.
Yo, what's up, Myron? Welcome to the show again.
Hey, what's going on? How you been?
I've been good, man. I've been good.
All right.
So you know, the last time we did this, we did your story, man, and now here we are doing you a second interview with you. And this time, like I told the audience before, it's going to be a very interesting topic because there was something that you dropped on me. I don't know if it was a year ago, 2 years ago, whenever it was, I was blown away by the revelation that you had of Song of Solomon. And it just really, like, it really changed my perspective on it, and it also changed my perspective on daughters specifically. So for those that are listening, today's show is going to basically be about the Song of Solomon. We're going to be basically dealing with the subject of how to deal with daughters and, you know, just women in general. We're going to look at that and how the Song of Solomon literally opens it up to us on a very deep level. If you study deep enough, you'll find out it's so much rich information in there. And, I mean, you know, I've studied the Song of Solomon before, but I definitely never got into it the way you broke it down, bro. I mean, you said some stuff that I was like, wow. I mean, yeah, we need to have a conversation about that, because you were dropping gems on me about how you deal with your daughters and whatnot. And, I mean, you have six of them, so I know you got plenty of experience with that. So I just want to, you know, get right into it, bro. Like, first of all, you and I both have that in common as far as having daughters. I mean, my two biological children are daughters, and I always wanted to have boys, but I stopped at two on purpose, and you know, but God blessed me where I got two sons through marriage, so I'm very happy about that too. So I know. Man. In a unique way, you know, I know both sides of it, you know, as far as having boys and girls. However, I've mainly spent my life in as an adult and as a parent with girls. So, you know, that's something that you have been dealing with for 20 plus years, you know. So you have a lot more experience in that than I do. And but not only that, but you also have a unique revelation on some things that are relevant to girls and women. And that's why I wanted us to do this podcast, because you just, like I said, you blew my mind with the revelation you dropped on me. So we're going to really get into it and go as deep as we can with this. So the first thing I want to say is that, you know, one thing about girls, and, I mean, you may or may not touch on this later, but one thing about girls is that their relationship with their father is very pivotal in how they're going to deal with men.
And, exactly. Yeah.
And it's going to be – critical to how they will interact with male figures, whether it be authority figures, whether it be with God the Father, you know, things like that. So it's very important that fathers, daughters, that their daughters need to see as far as how a man should be, because that's going to be the one thing that sets the tone for the rest of their lives. And so if we as men who have children, who have daughters specifically, do what we're supposed to do with those daughters, then we're going to find that most likely they're going to turn out to be pretty good, and they're going to be, you know, they're going to be healthy in that sense or whatever. But also, one of the things that I've seen, and I've seen it with a lot of people these days, where they go through a divorce, and then the spouse, the former spouse, will do some very evil things to destroy the relationship between the father and the daughters. And when that happens, there are a lot of things that are taken out of their father's hands, specifically because he doesn't live with them anymore full time. So the enemy has now a chance to creep in and start to work on that daughter's psyche. And even if that father does stay in her life, and even if he does spend time with her and all that, it's still not the same as her living with him, because on those days that he's not living with her, she can be poisoned by her mom against her father. So just imagine, just imagine a man going from being married to the daughter's mom, and then those daughters going through a divorce, which already makes children feel a certain way anyway. And then when you go through the divorce, then the mom, if she's not a Christian and if she's not someone that's a good woman, she will then poison them to hate their father. She would try to turn them against him so that she can, quote unquote, have all the power, have all the influence, and then have all the attention from the children. So then that poisons the daughters to then think evil against men. And even though the father is in their life, there's always that struggle against a man based on what their mom said. Because now the mom potentially has more influence on their mindset than the father does. Now, I know that you haven't experienced that. Thank God you didn't have to experience that part. But I know that you've dealt with things uniquely as a man who was married for 20-something years to the same woman and then had six children by that same woman, six girls, and they were all in that situation with you together. But now it's like now it's like you're being faced with a different type of scenario, which is the younger ones, like the three youngest ones, are now going to grow up without their mother. And that could possibly affect them in a way that you can't even see right now.
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
We're going to obviously, you know, be believing for and praying for the best outcome in their lives and in their spirits and all that. But we just never know what kind of attack the enemy is going to launch against them for any kind of reason to try to get them off for whatever purpose that he has to do that. So having said all that, bro, I'm going to ask you this question. First of all, did you ever picture yourself having all the, you know, so many daughters or even so many children, period?
Well, you know what? I never really took that into account as we began planning for our family. I really saw that the scripture says, you know, blessed is the man, you know, whose quiver is full, you know. And so I believe in that part of the scriptures, and I know everyone does, but I never, you know, had a like a desire to say, oh, I'm going to stop here, or I'm going to stop there, or we're going to have four children, we have two children, you know. We never had that, you know. We just lived life, and then we looked at it as children were a gift from God, you know. Children were a gift from God. So that never took an account. I never thought about that, you know. Never.
I know people that do,
but we never, you know, and that question's always been posed to me, you know, did you have a turning point where you were going to stop? And that was, you know, if I did have to say one, it was the last one, you know, and that was for medical reasons more so than anything on her part. And so we took that into account.
Okay, so when you were going through these, I would call them phases of having children, the one thing that I always tell people when I see that they're, you know, looking to have a family and things of that nature, I always tell them, listen, make sure that you can financially support the amount of kids that you plan on having, because that is where it becomes really tough in any marriage when you can't provide for your kids or your family in general. So what was it about your scenario in your life that made you either feel like you can handle that and so you didn't really give it any kind of consideration, or how did that look as they were coming along, like as far as your finances and, you know, whether you struggled or not, man? Tell us how life was.
Okay. Yeah. That was interesting, to say the least. A lot of it was, you know, just blessings from God, you know, and so many people, we kind of raised our family in this little bubble, went from one bubble to another bubble, which was the army, the military bubble, and then we went to the ministry school bubble. And so in both of those bubbles, you know, you tend to see large families. You see military personnel with large families, and you tend to see ministry families with large families. And so that was kind of the norm. And so we lived amongst in a little commune, kind of in a sense, where we shared a lot of things, and we got help from each other. And those two groups of scenarios, you know, there was group help, you know, in a group setting. And so we never really lived outside of our means. We never really did things that were super extra. We made do, you know. We never wanted for anything. Things weren't cut off. Things weren't, you know, repoed. We always had a roof over our head, and we always had, you know, food in our refrigerator and money in the bank, you know, and we just did things very simplistically. And so another thing is that I was blessed with a wife that was very frugal and very had a mindset on savings, and a great, you know, Proverbs 31 manager of the house wife. You know, she could manage things. And so a lot of it were her skills on managing things.
Wow. So that's good, because everybody doesn't have that. And, so that's one of the things that, you know, I would say that when a person is looking to do something like that, or specifically when they're looking to have a lot of children, or any children, to be honest, I mean, one child is a great responsibility alone. But if you add more to that, it becomes greater and greater and greater. Now, in that scenario, it sounds like your wife was probably at home and you were the one that was working.
That's correct. Yeah, she did. You know, it wasn't until later on in our marriage that she actually left the home and worked. You know, and then one of the, if you notice in both of the scenarios, in both groups, it was a community effort, you know. It was definitely a community effort. God is in commune, and we were basically in the community, you know, and that community really looked out for each other. You know, we watched each other kids. We cooked in groups. We did all those things in both these groups, because, you know, a lot of times, especially in the military, I was away, gone a lot of times, you know, and for periods of time. And so the neighbors and the families in that group kind of looked out for each other, you know. And the same thing when I was in theology school, when I was in seminary, long hours in libraries, long hours writing papers. I needed quiet. I needed to do a lot of different things, you know. The groups helped. And so I really, really, really encourage people to not to be lone rangers. Families tend to be lone rangers and do things alone a lot of times, you know, because, you know, sometimes people can be, you know, messy, you know, and it's hard to be able to do that, you know. And you can do that in the church community as well. But, you know, a lot of times families have got to, these days, they don't communicate, or they don't commune, or they don't, you know, group up in families. And so that's I think that's a lost thing, that the church was founded on a family group and groups that stuck together. And so I think that was one of the keys that helped me, was the group mentality. Even though I was still responsible for providing and taking care of everything, the group really helped out.
You hit on a key point there about community. And that's one of the things that I fully agree on as well. I was just talking to a brother recently, and he was just telling me about how he was having some issues in his marriage. And I said, well, one of the things that you need to do is have community. You need to have people around you that can speak to your situation and be objective and be able to speak to both you and your wife and check both of you. Because if you're not getting checked and it's just you and her, then guess what? Both of you are always going to be right in your sight, and neither one of you, unless you actually really are humble. When a person is humble and they truly understand that they can miss it and they're not going to just be trying to win an argument, then that's one thing. But if you know you're dealing with somebody that's always trying to be the one to win the argument instead of them knowing what's right and admitting what's right, then you're going to always have issues in that regard. So I was just saying that to say you need community, because in community you have brothers and sisters that can see how the both of you are, and they can help you in many different ways. And that's one of the ways that you just pointed out, how they can help by supporting, you know, with the children in whatever kind of way. And you can have that in your community situation.
Trusted community.
Trust. So with that being said, man, I know that you've been in a lot of moving around scenarios. Like, how many times have you moved? How many times did you move while you were married?
We moved a whopping 8 times. 8 movements through duty stations and ministry opportunities. So 8 times, you know, so that was a lot. You know, I had my oldest 2 probably have attended, you know, where normally you attend maybe 3 or 4 schools, elementary, middle school, and high school. My 2 oldest have probably have attended 7 or 8 schools, you know.
Wow.
Less for my younger children, but for my older 2, yeah, 8 schools that they have attended. And with that, they adjusted. Now I will say there were some gaps when you move from state to state. There were gaps because of from going from one state to another state. My oldest adjusted well. My second daughter, you know, had a little bit more issues and needed a little bit more help. But my wife made sure that the gaps were filled in. You know, we made sure that the gaps were filled in.
So, you know, this is like, I'm pretty much trying to, like, I'm setting the stage for what we're talking about today to give people a more balanced look at, you know, your perspective, and not only that, but, you know, how these kind of situations, even though they happen in your family, you've seen some good overall results in your family. I mean, I know that, you know, one of your daughters is the top goalie in the nation, and you also have another daughter that's really doing well in science and, you know, dealing with, you know, I guess it would be the medical field, dealing with animals and stuff like that, veterinarian, right? So,
yes, right.
So they're both, you know, doing exceptionally well in those things. And You got some other kids that are coming behind them that are seeming to sprout in different ways as well. And I'm just curious, man, like, when did you get into this study of the Song of Solomon, and what made you go so deep into it?
Well, it happened to be one of the books that that we were studying while in seminary back in 2004, and I just stumbled upon it upon this by looking at this scripture, because it just dawned on me that this book is very rarely taught in churches, and it had such a good flow to it, because it talked about some of the things that I agree with. Like, you know, I look at they should court. A courtship leads to marriage, you know, and it talks about this courtship. It talks about this relationship and how it was progressing and how it was, you know, moving forward. And it's almost like a picture of Christ in the church, you know, and because those are the only two relationships that really that God is really concerned about is marriage. In your divine relationship with him, you know, and he gives a really big picture of it in the Song of Solomon. And I'm like, how did Solomon, you know, because we know the story on Solomon, how did he write this and with such intimacy and such knowledge when we know the story of Solomon and his, you know, he had 700 wives and 200-300 concubines and things like that. So it had to have been very early in his life. And so I surmise that this was written before he became a polygamist, you know, and which you see it in Proverbs, and then you got Ecclesiastes, where he writes when he's in his old age, you know, when he looks back and says, man, I shouldn't have done what I did back in those days. And he's kind of, you know, a grumpy old man, as he writes Ecclesiastes. But I like Song of Solomon because at the end, it goes to the beginning. At the end, it goes to the beginning. And the beginning is with the daughter, with the woman, with the young girl. At the end, he goes there. And that what caught my eye in chapter 8.
So all of this is basically coming out of chapter 8 that you're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is the what they call the epilogue, the final part to this song, because this is definitely was a very complex lyrical writing, you know, this definitely was to music, and these had to be like really professional singers that actually sang this Song of Solomon, you know, and it's poetic. It is, you know, and you being a poet, this is a great poetry, you know, and it puts it to music, and it sets it off and ends it with going back to the beginning, where you would think that you would put this part at the beginning, but he, the writer of this poem, puts it at the beginning, I mean at the end. And it's really profound on how he does this. And so it's in chapter 8 in verses 8, 9, and 10. That's where and this is where I use to raise my daughters so that they are aware of what is going on with them.
Yeah. So I would like for you to, you know, let's slowly go through Songs of Solomon, chapter 8. And I would like for you to just break it down, man, how you kind of, you'll be breaking it down more thoroughly than you did for me the first time. But mm-hmm. I would like for you to break it down and really bring out the truths that are in here. So, look, you mind if we go through that?
No. It's my pleasure. So, you know, well, let's, if we can start at one to eight, verse one. It talked about, it goes into the Shulamite's love for a husband. And it talks about how it increased throughout the marriage, you know. And in this ancient, like, Near Easterners, they did not like public display of intimacy. And so she's using these words. The words are just, in her sense, are coming from how she's using it to how she would be able to display these emotions, but through family. So only family could have public displays of affection, okay? So she couldn't do it with anyone else. And so she's talking about with her brothers, you know, and she goes through about how she goes through how it is to exchange these emotions through her family, you know. And as she goes through, she gets upon, talks about how they first met, you know, and it leads to the point where to a Genesis moment, because she kind of says that they found her under a tree, and that, you know, in verse five. And it talks about how she came through to be seen under a tree. Maybe she was sleeping under a tree of that nature. And then he even uses the wilderness. We know that the wilderness is understood to by the Jewish people at that time as a sign of struggle. And so they've gone through the struggle of a relationship. The struggle of finding out if they are who they are supposed to be and that they're supposed to be together.
Thanks for listening to the New Numa Godcast once again. This is your host, Norm. Follow me at Norm the Professor on IG. I'm in agreement for power and breakthrough in your life. Keep tuning in every week for that real talk, new life.